My guest at this time is Professor Michael Weissachin. He's a seismologist with Washington University in St. Louis. He just happens, though, to be in San Francisco, one of the areas that was put on tsunami alert on Friday following that massive earthquake off the east coast of Japan. He joins me now to offer some of his observations in the wake of that. And, Professor, it's good to have you with us.
Thank you very much for having me on.
We see from the U.S. Geological Survey that this is the fifth most powerful earthquake since they began keeping statistics more than a century ago. The number three on that list is the one that triggered the major tsunami off the coast of Sumatra. And I know last year the Chilean earthquake was pretty high up into the eights as well. What should we read into the fact that we're seeing so many historically powerful earthquakes in a relatively short period of time?
We get a lot of questions about that because certainly if you look at the seismic activity in the last 2 years, it looks like the Earth is ramping up in its activity. But what's interesting is if you actually look at the pattern of earthquakes historically, there's nothing unusual about this. We get, on average, a magnitude 8 earthquake every year. We get a dozen to 20 magnitude 7s every year. In fact, there's a magnitude 6 earthquake or larger somewhere around the world every 3 days. Now, what is happening is media is improving tremendously. So when an earthquake happens in Indonesia that in the past no one heard about, you know, it's on the radio, you know, 10 minutes later. And human population's increasing. So an earthquake that might have done a little bit of damage, not a big problem 100 years ago, you know, may kill hundreds to thousands of people now. So certainly the damage is increasing. The number of deaths is increasing over time, but that's a function of, the cities, more people moving to cities and being more susceptible to tsunamis and earthquakes, and also just the fact that you hear about it now in ways that you never did in the past.
In terms of the location of these, we obviously see the major one Friday off the coast of Japan, a couple of weeks ago in New Zealand. Last year, we certainly saw a major one right on the Pacific coast of South America in Chile. And then there was the one in the Indian Ocean. So there's kind of this...
In Haiti, that right near the capital, that killed 250,000 people.
Exactly right. Those first series of earthquakes, though, that I mentioned, all seem to have some sort of connection to the Pacific Ocean. I don't know if they have connection to specific plates out there. Is there a particular part of the world that's more volatile?
Well, most of the world's earthquakes are actually along the Ring of Fire around the Pacific, going, as you mentioned, from South America through Central America, all the way up the coast of North America to Alaska, down Siberia, Japan, the Philippines, down in towards Tonga and out into Indonesia. These areas will always get repeatedly hit with earthquakes. And the reason is these are the places where the pieces of the ocean seafloor are actually sinking back into the planet. So this is how plate tectonics works. Ocean seafloor doesn't last very long if you're a geologist, only about 200 million years. I know that sounds like a lot of time, but it's only 4% of the age of the Earth. And as that seafloor gets old and cold and heavy, it eventually will sink back, usually at the edge of a continent. So all these regions around the Pacific, what we call the Ring of Fire, are places of the most elevated volcanic activity and seismic activity. And historically have, even places in the United States, I mean, most people don't realize there was a magnitude 9 or greater earthquake that happened right beneath Seattle and Portland back on January 26, 1700. In fact, it created a huge tsunami that did damage in Japan, going the other direction of the tsunami that happened today. And so this is a regular occurrence in this part of the world.
We're talking with Professor Michael Weissachin of Washington University in St. Louis. As I mentioned, he was in San Francisco on Friday as the effects of the tsunami hit the coast. Were you able to witness any of that, Professor?
Well, it's interesting. I actually was in San Francisco for this meeting of the National Science Teacher Association and had the opportunity this morning to go down to Golden Gate Park. And I watched to see the first few waves come in. And they really couldn't be seen above the surf. They actually, the waves are pretty strong today. And however, just a little south of here, down in Santa Cruz, the harbor had amplified the effect of the tsunami, which is not uncommon. And it broke a number of boats off their moorings, even sank one. and did some damage there. I mean, if you look at the video footage, it doesn't look dramatic the way the terrible tsunami ripped across the land in Japan. But the rapid elevation of water was significant enough to do some damage.
One of the things that we heard earlier is that when a tsunami like we saw today, or perhaps was a slight one was triggered in the Chilean earthquake last year, is that if it has to go across an entire ocean, by the time it gets to land, there's not going to be much left of it. From what you said of that earthquake that was in what is now Washington State about 300 years ago, that may not be the case. Is it possible for a major tsunami to still be very, very powerful after it crosses an entire ocean?
Yes, and that is one of the real dangers of a tsunami. Another is the fact that when the earthquake first occurs, you can't use the magnitude of the earthquake as a means of projecting what the magnitude of the tsunami will be, because it has to do with very particular factors of how much of the seafloor actually gets ruptured and lifted into the water column. But the waves from tsunamis are significantly bent by changes in ocean depth, the bathymetry. And there is a significant focusing and defocusing effect. So, for instance, the largest earthquake that we've ever measured, which happened in Chile in 1960, created a tsunami that was focused actually, as it went around and through the French Polynesian islands, focused towards Japan and actually destroyed a number of villages along the coast in Japan all the way across the Pacific Ocean. And yet there were other places that barely felt the tsunami at all. So the amplitudes of the tsunami vary significantly region to region because of this focusing effect as it propagates across the ocean. In addition, there is also significant amplification that can happen along a particular coast. Whether you have an inlet or a bay, these tend to focus the energy and give you much larger run-up from a tsunami.
You mentioned the Ring of Fire. Is that primarily going to mean that we'll get the biggest tsunamis off of quakes like this one off of a major fault line?
That's right, although it's interesting, if you go back, for instance, in the Indian Ocean before that deadly Sumatra earthquake in Christmas of 2004, the last large tsunami in the Indian Ocean was actually the eruption of Krakatoa back in 1883 that killed about 36,000 people from the tsunami. And in the Atlantic Ocean, the worst tsunamis have been from enormous underwater landslides. If you look at side-scan sonar images along like trenches like the Puerto Rico Trench or around islands like the Canary Islands and Cape Verde Islands off the coast of Africa, you see evidence of massive underwater landslides, and these would have disturbed the water column enough. Some geologists have even suggested that a particular underwater landslide along the La Palma Island in the Canary Islands created a tsunami more than 100 feet high that would have hit the east coast of what is now the United States. This would have happened far back in the past, and no one was there at the time. But these are always possibilities. So, you know, to look at this, we have put in now tsunami warning systems, not just in the Pacific Ocean, but also in the Atlantic Ocean. There are earthquakes that do cause tsunamis. There was one that destroyed Lisbon, Portugal in 1755. It created a tsunami that was actually recorded in Jamaica, across the Atlantic at that time, but also things like underwater landslides. Any time you disturb the sea floor with some sort of geologic event, you can generate a tsunami.
Absolutely fascinating. Professor, thank you so much for your time today.
Certainly. Thank you very much for having me on.
Absolutely. Professor Michael Wysession is a seismologist at Washington University in St. Louis. I'm Greg Corumbus.